let's resume the information items on agenda item 7. We'll go to the overview of customer data and financial impacts related to the coronavirus. Charles.
Yeah, I don't
have
this.
I want to check and make sure director record's back on.
Yes. Oh. Director Record, are you back on?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, President Solomon. Good morning, members of the board.
Morning.
Appreciate this opportunity to present this item with Laura related to customer data and the financial impacts we're seeing related to COVID-19. So by way of background, as you may remember, Senate Bill 998 went into effect in February of this year, and one of the main provisions in there was the 60-day delinquency timeline. Following that was the executive order signed by Governor Newsom, and really what was in that order was restricting water shutoffs as a state response to COVID-19. I'm just adjusting my mic here. Laura was helping me out. There we go. Thank you, Laura. It's also important to note that in that executive order, it was clear that it does not eliminate the obligation of the customer to pay for the water services that they consume. And so those items have had some impacts in payments and delinquencies, and we'll be reviewing those with you here this morning. So some of the areas that have been impacted, account aging is one of them. And when we look at the last 3 months, we've seen aging go up. And basically what aging is unpaid customer bills that are greater than 61 days old. We've also looked at customers that are going past due, comparing this year to last year, and we've seen an increase this year. And Director Pauly, I believe this will answer the question that you asked in our last report, comparing delinquencies this year to last year related to this item. And then just as a general reminder, we are continuing to assist customers with, you know, the various payment options that are available to them, adjusting late fees and the like. So when we take a look at account aging, following Senate Bill 998 being implemented in February of this year, you'll see March did increase to 6.5%. However, when we looked at the 3 months following the executive order in April, account aging has averaged 9.3%. Now, in comparison to this aging, when we looked at the close of last year, aging was at 3.5%. Taking a further look back to 2009, which as you all remember was a Great Recession, it was at 11.4%. So, you know, it's nothing that we haven't seen before, but Laura will be sharing a little bit more about aging and some of the projections that Finance Department has prepared. So moving on to delinquent customers, Dr. Pauly, this is a response to your question. What you're looking at here is the percent of customers that are past due this year compared to last year. And due to the statutory requirement of Senate Bill 998, you'll see that we reset the delinquency timeline, and that's reflected there in February. However, when you look at March through April, you know, delinquencies have increased. Interesting enough, though, in April and May, there was somewhat of a downward trend, and when you look at May, it was somewhat in line with last year. However, June did increase again to 21% this year compared to last year, 15%. So when we looked at those 4 months, the monthly average increase of customers going delinquent this year compared to last year is about 8,600 customers. So I'll pause, Director Pauly, and anybody else, if you have questions, any comments related to this?
No, I mean, it's just interesting data, and I don't have an explanation for it, but you're right, May is on par with a year ago, and then you spike again in June. So, it's, you know, I appreciate the data, though. I think that's, you know, it's interesting to see.
Good. And then moving on to payment arrangements, as I mentioned, you know, we've advised staff to continue to assist our customers with the various payment options available, one of them being payment arrangements. So the graph on the left represents the count of payment arrangements, and the graph on the right represents the dollars for those arrangements that have been set. And again, when we looked at April and May, if you look at the graph on the left, April and May, again, in line with 2019. However, what we're seeing is that there's longer repayment plans that are slightly increasing the amortized dollars. And if we take a closer look, if you look at May, 2019 was about 5,500 payment arrangements that were requested compared to 5,300 this year, so 200 less payment arrangements were requested by our customers. However, when you look at the dollars, it's about 30,000 more. So that, again, it's the same amount of customers, but they're requesting longer repayment terms with higher balances, which is increasing the amount that is being set up on payment arrangements.
Is that in for the payment arrangements, is that for new arrangements, or is that just the total amount of arrangements in the system?
Total amount. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I think what's interesting, if I might, Charles, about yes, this data and on the previous slide as well, is there's going to be some variations month
sure
to month.
Yeah.
I would be more concerned if these bars were twice as big for 2020 as they are for 2019. We are seeing some variation and some slight trend upwards, but on a relative basis, it's a fairly small percentage.
No, I agree. I would call this pretty good news, and, you know,
all things considered.
All things considered, I think it's, I too was looking to think that these bars would be twice as large as last year. So I think it's a good testament to the job we do that they're not. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Charles.
Yep. So I'll pass it on to Laura.
Let's bring this down. Riley.
The boom microphone.
Yes. Good morning, directors. Nice to be here in front of you. So just in way of history, in early May, along with the information on account agings and delinquencies that Charles has provided, Charles Turner also went over financial and operating information to see how we were faring with COVID at that point in time. And at that time, while our delinquencies were going up, were increasing, we really didn't see a material impact at that point. At that meeting, we also discussed the importance of projecting future possible outcomes and financial scenarios that may happen. You know, we don't want to just be sitting back and waiting. We want to be looking out to the future. So we promised that for the board, we would bring back a financial model. So another benefit of having this financial model was being able to utilize the data to recommend adjustments to our original 2021 budget that was prepared almost 18 months ago. We had no idea COVID was in the horizon. So you have seen pieces of this at the presentation last month, so you'll be a little bit familiar with what we're talking about. The approach to the financial model, obviously our objective was to project possible economic and financial scenarios and outcomes. And the way that we approached that was we had to look at critical budget parameters, what really affects the district's financials. First off, obviously what Charles was speaking of, customer payments and collections are very critical to our operation to be able to fund our capital projects and other operations. Water demand, obviously, and water sales is a critical component. Connection fees. We have a big development community here at Eastern, and so that really affects our revenues. Operating expenses. When our water demand changes, obviously our operating expenses are going to change as well, which is going to benefit the situation in most cases. And property tax collections. What Thomas brought today, are we going to have delinquencies for people paying property taxes? So we took all of those key assumptions into consideration. We do a forecast, and then we drop them into our financial model, kind of like our financial statement. And from there, we're able to look at our fiscal metrics. You know, what is the rating agencies looking at? What do we need to look at, such as our debt service coverage, our days cash, aging receipts is what Charles reported, and write-offs. So this is a chart we included in the budget presentation in June, so you're a bit familiar with it. The model allows for multiple scenarios, and in this case, we provided two scenarios. The green column is the forecast impact, which we kind of are realistically looking at. These are the numbers that we included in the budget, budget adjustments that we proposed to the board and that were approved back in June. They were created based on actual numbers that are happening in 2020, and then just speaking to subject matter experts and finding out what their thoughts were on where they think we'll be with COVID. Then there was the yellow column, which is the severe column. It's the worst case scenario that we can think of. Really, we have to provide that to say, okay, if we really had a bad situation, this is what it would look like. And then the last column was provided really just as a reference point. What happened in the Great Recession? A couple things that we talked about in June, highlights, was obviously looking at the water sales. Whoa, what happened? 100,000 acre feet, now down to 80. What does that mean? Well, that's success. That was our conservation efforts, which is what was our goal. In the connection fees, $30 million, we dropped to $30 million, and here we're dropping to 43. Why aren't we dropping lower? Well, it was a whole different recession. There was a housing market crash. This COVID is bringing issues for the commercial side of the house, so we're anticipating that we will not get that low during this crisis. So we were able to kind of look at, this is kind of how we evaluated everything, to be able to bring those numbers to the board in the green column and feel comfortable about what we were projecting for our fiscal year ending 2021. And then we take, as part of the model, then we take these key assumptions, the forecast that we projected on the previous slide, to determine the overall fiscal impact to the district. You'll see that the top half of the table really looks like a financial statement. It just shows what our financial results would be with our original budget, with our forecast, and with the severe situation if that were to happen. The bottom half of the table relates to our financial metrics that we look at. How much unrestricted reserves will we have if these different scenarios happened? What will our days cash on hand look like? And what will our debt service coverage be? And if you look across the rows of each of them, you're gonna see that there's no significant impact to any of these that would cause us to be alarmed. Our days cash on hand is remaining around 550 days cash. Our debt service coverage is remaining around 2x coverage, which is excellent. We will, even at the most severe impact, if we had a worst case scenario, something severe happened that we're just not seeing right now, it won't cause the rating agencies to downgrade us. And we feel very comfortable with that. But again, we'll have to continue to monitor this, keep an eye on these numbers, monitor on a quarterly basis. We bring financial statements to you every quarter, and we'll be able to analyze it at that time. So these next few slides really just highlight the history of a few of our critical financial parameters. The first two, really, Charles really hit really great. The accounts receivable, you know, it's influenced by seasonality, the local economy, so what we're talking about today, COVID-19, and drought conditions. And the total AR plus 60 plus days is expected to increase, and that's what Charles showed in his numbers from his customer service numbers. And so at the most, the green bars that are on the end under the COVID-19, that's where we're forecasting that we're going to remain at. It's kind of going to go up and down a little bit over time. If for some reason a severe situation happened, we would be the yellow line that spikes up. But even at its worst, it's in line with 2014. But we're not anticipating to end up there. The next slide is our accounts receivable write-offs. We have had real success with our write-offs in current years. So I think we had $200,000 budgeted, which is a very small amount, and we've been achieving that for the last several years. We've had really great collections. Our customers pay timely. And in this case, the board approved the budget adjustment to take it to $1 million. We're monitoring that. We're not anticipating that we're going to hit that number, but you know, we've just got to keep an eye on it. I think the success of the payment plans that Charles's group is promoting to our customers is going to help with this number tremendously. And then lastly, we spoke of the connection fees, critical element to our revenue. And so working with Corey Wallace in development, we estimated that we'll have about a 13% drop for the 2021 year. But it's wait to be seen. Our CFDs are rolling in like crazy. So it's hard to gauge. So we'd rather be a little bit conservative and say, okay, we're going to have a little bit less revenue, but in no way do we see us, you know, getting to recession levels. But we'll keep monitoring that.
Particularly, if I might add, Corey's even looked at more recent data that says the area where we're seeing some drop in EMS and EDU payments for water and sewer, respectively, are on the commercial side, and pretty much not present on the residential side. Given the vast majority of our service area is residential and the development is residential, that's why we only forecast this level of a drop.
So lastly, just in summary, you know, while our delinquencies and maybe our aging are increasing a bit, overall our financial position is very strong. We are prepared to weather kind of the next several months and see where this leads us. You know, the way it's looking is we could have, you know, this shutdown environment for the next 6 months. It's hard to say. But we can weather the storm. Even in the most severe scenario, the data shows that we will be okay and even better than okay from a financial perspective. And that we'll be able to maintain our strong ratings with the rating agencies. So the next steps would be that we would just continue to bring these reports to you on a quarterly basis. Obviously, if something extreme happens, we'll bring something to you sooner. If we start seeing a fall off on these numbers, a drop off, we'll bring you some information sooner. So with that ends my formal presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great.
No, I think it's a good report. You know, it's kind of hear what you hear in the market out there that commercial is going to be difficult. But for the next, they look at the next 4 to 5 years for residential in this region to continue to move forward.
Well, good. Hopefully our projections come in better than planned.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, let's go to the federal legislative update with Jolene.
Jolene, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Thank you.
I'm pleased to be before you again to provide a federal update. I'll start with a brief overview of kind of the schedule and what's on the horizon. We're already about halfway through the year. Thankfully, there's only about 7 weeks of the congressional session remaining, and the House continues to conduct business mostly virtually, and they're allowing for virtual hearings and proxy voting in the House. However, the Senate is still not allowing proxy voting, and they continue to conduct business in person. We have about 111 days until the election on November 3rd. Kind of flashing back a couple of weeks, just prior to heading into the 4th of July recess, the House passed H.R. 2, the Moving Forward Act, which is a $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill. It's essentially a collection of Democratic ideas for modernizing the country's aging infrastructure and also combating climate change. The bill would fund nearly all of EMWD's federal water priorities like Title 16, the Wind Desalination Program, Water Smart. Both components of the SRF program, the sewer overflow program, PFAS cleanup, $500 million for the Army Corps Environmental Infrastructure Program, which is very important to us. And there are also some Treasury and tax issues, one of which is the language that would exempt gross income for water conservation rebates, which we've been working on. However, the bill faces long odds of becoming law. President Trump has already issued a veto threat, and Republicans are concerned about the perceived resemblance to the Green New Deal. So while it's a giant bill and the water provisions are just one part of it, but that bill is not going anywhere. So looking forward to the FY21 House appropriations, that process is underway. While there's been no legislation considered on the House floor since July 2nd, the House does continue to conduct hearings and legislative markups. Starting last week and into this week, the House Appropriations Committee has been moving their FY21 spending bills at a very quick clip and will complete markups of all 12 appropriation measures by the end of the week. The two spending bills that fund water programs that are of greatest interest and importance to us are the Energy and Water and Interior EPA measures, and those have passed out of the full committee. I'm not going to go into detail on those because they're not going anywhere. On the Senate side, the appropriations process is stalled, and in mid-June, the Senate Appropriations Committee Democrats announced they would offer a range of policy provisions during the markup sessions for those spending bills. And with this news, the Senate Appropriations Chairman, Richard Shelby, canceled all scheduled markups, saying he wouldn't let the process devolve into a circus. So given the Senate's lack of action on the FY21 appropriations bills and the limited number of legislative days remaining before the end of the current fiscal year, Congress will need to pass a continuing resolution that goes beyond the election. Finalizing the FY21 spending bills will either occur in a post-election lame duck session, or Congress will have to pass another long-term CR that goes into the next calendar year. But we've all become very familiar with CRs, and Congress has been very good about passing them to ensure the government doesn't close. On to the Water Resources Development Act. Today, the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee is marking up their Water Resources Development Act legislation. As Paul mentioned earlier, the bill was unveiled on Monday, and we learned that EMWD's requested language to increase our original authorization for our desal program from $25 to $50 million was included in the measure. And our House delegation, including Calvert, Takano, and Ruiz, all submitted language to the House T&I Committee on our behalf. So their advocacy for this provision really made our success on that possible. The full House is scheduled to take up the WERDA measure in the week of July 27th, and we expect that to continue moving. As you probably recall, the Senate already passed out of committee their version of the WERDA bill, but the reports are that the Senate version of the WERDA bills are likely not going to go to the Senate floor for action, but instead the House and Senate committee staff are going to enter negotiations on a final WERDA package, likely sometime in August, with hopefully enactment in sometime in September. And of course, these days, no federal report is complete without an update on COVID. To date, Congress and the White House have approved $3 trillion in various COVID funding relief packages since the start of the outbreak. And earlier, the House passed a $3.5 trillion HEROES Act that would fund some infrastructure and other stimulus. Details on the next Senate COVID measure may emerge as soon as next week. And Senate Leader McConnell told reporters on Monday that he anticipates work on a Senate and then a final House and Senate compromise package coming to a head sometime in the next few weeks. Unconfirmed reports are coming out that the Senate bill will carry a price tag of somewhere around $1.3 million. The Senate package is also expected to include financial incentives to encourage schools to reopen, which if you have kids at home, you're rooting for this. And however, the congressional Democrats and Republicans, as you can tell, are still very far apart, and the House and Senate will have to find common ground on an unemployment aid extension. We're hearing that how forceful the White House will be in the final negotiations will be a major factor in Congress coming to a compromise on the next COVID package. So we'll keep you posted on that. In terms of a political outlook, the current polling has Republicans potentially at risk of losing both White House and Senate control, with Democrats maintaining control of the House. Specific House dynamics are kind of hard to predict at this time until more focused polling comes out, which is usually in August and September. But of the 34 Senate seats in play this November, 10 are seen as competitive. And of those 10, 2 are currently held by Democrats and 8 are held by Republicans. As you're all probably aware, currently the GOP maintains the 53-47 margin of control in the Senate, so Dems would need to gain 3 seats with the White House or 4 seats without the White House to take majority. So there's a lot at play this year. Of course, in the lame duck session is expected to get underway sometime in mid-November. And as you would expect, the productivity will be dictated by the outcome of the election. However, regardless of the outcome of the elections, there's usually pressure to complete the annual appropriations bills or, like we mentioned earlier, potentially CR. And then to end, Eastern is planning to conduct virtual capital meetings and agency meetings sometime during the month of September. We'll be working with VSA, our advocates in D.C., on the timing and scheduling of these meetings within the next few weeks. And that concludes my updates, unless there are any questions.
Any questions? No, I have no questions. It's a full report. There's just seems to be a lot going on. I don't think we're going to see a lot happen until after the election. So it's going to be an interesting time.
Thank you,
Joan. A lot of movement, but not much is happening.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that report, Jolene.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to agenda item 7, which is a receive and file. I'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 7A through 7B.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that.
Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Let's go to the calendar review. Nicole.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. I have a few new events for your consideration. The first is the BIA of Southern California is hosting a 2-part webinar on the future of doing business in California. Part one is scheduled for Thursday, July 16th, so tomorrow, at 10 a.m. And the second part is July 22nd, which is next Wednesday at 10 a.m. for those who'd like to participate.
Sure.
Thank you, Director Sullivan. For both?
Yes. What time is the one tomorrow? I'm sorry.
10 a.m.
10 a.m. Yeah, put me down for that, please.
Thank you, Director Pauly.
And the 22nd, too.
I will.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, the National Water Resources Association has changed its Western Water seminar to a table talk series. It'll be a 6-part series held on Thursdays in August and September. Begins at 11 a.m. The first one is scheduled for Thursday, August 6th. It is a district sponsorship, if anyone is interested in participating in any of those sessions. Even if you can't make it to the live session, they will be recorded and can be played later.
No, I'll be selective to, I'm not going to listen to all of them, but there'll be some, after I see who the speakers are and the real topic and who the panel is, you know, will create some interest.
I'll get you that information, Director Sullivan. Thank you. Moving to page two, we have the board's master calendar for the next 2 weeks. Since this report was printed, we learned that the meeting with Assemblymember Garcia's office has been rescheduled. We've removed that one from the calendar. For tomorrow, the board executive committee will meet at 7:30 a.m. for directors Slauson and Sullivan.
Yep.
And the joint committee meeting with Western is scheduled for tomorrow at 3:30 p.m., also directors Slauson and Sullivan.
Yes.
And Director Pauly, there is a placeholder on your calendar for July 20th for an executive committee meeting with Cal Diesel, but I believe that has been moved to July 27th.
I think you're correct, so that's fine.
Thank you. So we'll remove that.
Uh-huh.
Tuesday, July 21st, the SAPA Commission meeting will occur at 9:30 a.m. It is a virtual meeting for Director Slauson. Wednesday, July 22nd, Director Sullivan has an update with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. here at the district. Thursday, July 23rd, the Quarterly Deferred Compensation Administrative Oversight Committee will meet at 7:30 a.m. Uh-huh. That's for Directors Pauly and Slauson.
Uh-huh.
The Board Operations and Engineering Committee will meet on Thursday the 23rd at 3:30 p.m. Also Director Slauson and Director Sullivan. On Tuesday, July 28th, the Metropolitan Water District Committee meetings are scheduled for Director Record. On Wednesday, July 29th and Thursday, July 30th, the Aqua Summer Conference virtual event will occur. Director Sullivan and Director Record are both scheduled to participate. And just for anyone else who may be interested in participating, registration closes this Friday. So if you'd like me to add you, I can certainly do that. On Monday, August 3rd, Director Pauly has an update with the Deputy General Manager at 7:30 a.m., and that will be here at the district as well. The WRCOG Executive Committee will meet at 2 p.m. on Monday, August 3rd for Director Sullivan. Tuesday, August 4th, the SAPA Commission will meet at 9:30 a.m. That's Director Slauson. And the Ad Hoc Committee meeting with Rancho California Water District is scheduled for August 4th at 2 p.m., Directors Corona and Record. And moving to page three of your report, we have some upcoming conferences, special events listed. Just a note for Directors Pauly and Sullivan and anyone else interested in attending. August 14th, the BIA's Southern California Water Conference has now been switched to a virtual event. It begins at 9 a.m. and it is a district sponsorship, so we have one more complimentary registration available if anyone would like to participate. The upcoming board and committee meetings are listed. And on page four, you've got the joint interagency meetings. Everything is on schedule. Are there any questions or additions to the calendar? That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to the directors' meetings. Director Corona.
Okay, I attended via Zoom the Rancho California Water District meeting last week. It was, I guess the highlight was the discussion over filling the seat of Lisa Herman. She retired from Rancho's board after 29 years. Her family bought a home in Fallbrook. And so the discussion revolved around whether or not to appoint or to wait for the election. There was a lot of discussion. It became very interesting. It seems that John Rossi, who was appointed to Ben Drake's seat and has to run as an appointed director in this next election, is considering running for Lisa Herman's seat instead of Ben Drake's seat. There was discussion there whether directors could flip and change seats and things like that. There was concern that there was going to be, if they waited for the election and didn't fill the seat by appointment, that the seat would be empty for 6 months. In the end, there was a motion to hold to wait until the election. There was a substitute motion to appoint The vote on the appointment was a tie, and then the it fell back to the original motion, and it was a 4-2 vote to go to the election. They asked for my participation in that. If I had seen any situations like this in the past, and I recalled a situation back in 2003 where a similar thing happened between John Henniger leaving as the general manager and Jeff Minkler wanting to put his name in for that position. So Minkler resigned the position, his director's position. He was president of the board. He resigned that position. And then he was also had his name in for the election against none other than John Rossi at the time. And he eventually did not get the position at, as general manager, and then lost the election to Rossi. And then 5 months later, Rossi resigned and went to become the general manager at Western. So they wanted to know if I felt it would have any, having just six board members, if that would create a problem. And I said, well, it did at the time because we had a very, politically diverse group at the time, and it resulted in a lot of 3-3 votes over that summer. But I didn't think it affected the operation of the district at all, really. But anyway, so they went and voted, and then they had the 3-3 tie, and which kind of proved my point. But anyway, in the end, they decided to go ahead and wait until the election to fill that position. So they will have six directors until December, and that's my report.
Amazing. Okay, Director Pauly.
I had a good meeting with the general manager in the most underrated eating establishment in Riverside County, Cafe 217 upstairs, we were going to go someplace else, but for some reason the restaurants are closed again. But anyway, it was always with Paul, a very productive and informative to get into a little more detail than we can do at board meetings on some of the issues before the district. So I always appreciate that.
Okay. Director Record.
Under MWD meetings, there was no Finance and Insurance Committee agenda review because we had no Finance and Insurance Committee meeting this month. The gist of what happened was we had an item to consider financial impacts for COVID-19 and the fact that we are currently not collecting any money under our rate system to pay for local projects. That was a very contentious debate. We ended up moving it to executive committee with the hope that it will come to Finance and Insurance in September. And then the other very contentious items were the two LRP projects within San Diego County Water Authority. Very close vote and very a lot of discussion, and those passed. So we will see what happens. It's interesting that we suspended collecting the funds because of litigation by San Diego, and they were adamant that their projects be approved. So I'm not sure how that adds up. Just a general comment about the tenor of the meetings. The this calling in and the Zoom meetings, especially for the public, seems to enable a lot of anger and not much responsibility because you're not standing in front of the board. And so we've had a lot of public comment that have taken a long time. The Sierra Club, for some reason, thinks they should be in charge of selecting the new general manager and are very vocal and very caustic about the past performance of our GM, which is very unfortunate. And during the meetings, the directors are not using very good protocol. Some are not waiting to be called on and demanding that staff not make presentations, and just never seen anything like it. So very discouraging 2 days, but you know, we'll keep pushing forward. We really need to come to grips with how we fund local projects and demand management in an era of declining sales. And a lot of local projects of really large size on the horizon. I'm very concerned that for whatever reason, LA seems to be putting that discussion off, and it really needs to happen sooner than later. There is an MWD update printout that Jolene put together, which will have all the detail that you may want for everything else that happened. MWD meetings, the general manager update, always good. Joint Inland and Orange County caucuses, good discussion about MET board agenda, and I think those are very valuable meetings.
Okay, thank you. Director Slauson.
Yes. On June 19th, I participated in the Riverside County Task Force meeting. Good presentation by the different agencies. Matt Melendrez from Eastern, of course, gave a good update. These are all COVID-related matters. On June 24th, I attended the Business and Action Chamber meeting virtually, and it was attended by several city directors, et cetera. On the 'Sopocket Commission meeting, we discussed the Tribal Advisory Commission, whether or not we would create one, and that was pretty much decided no at this point. Thought that what is already existing between our agency and the individual member agencies of SAPA and their relationships with the tribes within their jurisdictions was probably adequate, and it could be expanded somewhat. We had a Lejua update, and we funded, allocated additional funds for the parking lot improvements. I had the meeting with the general manager on July 9th, and like everyone says, productive, and it's nice to have the additional information. And on 2 days ago, whatever date that is, the 13th, we had a meeting at SAPA, or Milford and I, along with all of key staff players, discussing the joint committee we have with OC, and because we have an upcoming meeting, so they introduced us to, at least gave us the profiles and discussed all the items that are coming up on the agenda item for our next SAPA meeting. Joint committee meeting is to occur right after the next SAPA meeting.
Commission. That with OCSD?
What's that?
With OCSD?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Good. Okay. On July 2nd, I did attend the mayor's roundtable in Menifee. I thought it was extremely productive. It was primarily for commercial and residential development items. We had a number of commercial people there who were saying they were basically shut down. And there was a lot of residential people there, developers that seemed to be moving forward, which says a whole bunch. And it was also nice to note that the development community, along with the Menifee staff, just called out Corey Wallace as somebody that's a problem solver, and everybody loves working with him. He helps out a lot of people. So that was kind of nice to hear that in front of a whole bunch of people. I did attend or listen to the NWRA federal call last Friday. I thought it was informative. I think Jolene gave pretty much an update of some of the things that were talked about in there. I did note that, there's still a lot of things that need to be done, and it'll be interesting to see what happens on their virtual conference here coming up. That's it for me. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items?
I just wanted to mention back to Lisa Herman and her time on Rancho's board, and I think it would be kind of nice if we did something for 29 years is a long time.
That's a great suggestion,
great idea.
I think that we ought to have a nice resolution for Lisa. She's actually, to my knowledge, been pretty much of an EMWT advocate.
Absolutely.
Down there.
Yeah.
And she's was also a calming voice in many things that were down there. And so, you know, that's a great suggestion.
We'll place that on the next agenda.
Terrific. Okay.
Thank you.
Council, we have reason for closed session today.
We do, Mr. Chair, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, one item of existing litigation, Garin versus Eastern Municipal Water District.
Okay. With that, let's just take a very, very short break so we can clear the room, and we have another phone in for the closed session.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Thank you.
Thank you.